Professor, your host on Non-Random Thoughts. Today we're going to be discussing issues related to academic freedom and research on 9/11. This last 10 days or so, there have been huge developments in relation to reaching out to the public and letting them know, understand what's going on. Scholars for 9/11 Truth, which I founded, including a presentation on C-SPAN of the panel discussion that occurred on Sunday morning during the 9/11 American Scholars Symposium held in Los Angeles on the 24th and the 25th of June. C-SPAN was there taping, and we had all been looking forward very much to their running the program, and it turned out that last Saturday they played it not once but twice, the following Sunday yet again. These were good time slots, and on Tuesday yet a fourth time. This is really quite a remarkable breakthrough in communicating with the public through at least one of the most prominent forms of mass media, and in particular one that has tremendous credibility, C-SPAN. So that I think this has made a huge difference in legitimizing public discussion about what happened on 9/11. The panel discussion itself was moderated by Alex Jones, the well-known syndicated commentator who has his own radio program and does quite a variety of productions of different kinds, including documentaries, where he featured his latest on 9/11 called Terror Storm as the very first presentation during the conference. But also Webster Harpley, Bob Bowman, Steve Jones, and myself. I hope you all have a chance to catch it. In just a moment, we're going to be turning to issues of academic freedom with my special guest, Stanley Fish.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Gasoline prices have reached record highs, and with no relief in sight, what can you as an individual do to lessen the impact on your wallet? With a guaranteed minimum of 10% and up to 30% increase in your fuel mileage, you can deny the fat cat oil executives at least some of your hard-earned money. Introducing the Fuel Mule, a very simple but revolutionary product that fits around the fuel line in your car, truck, or furnace. Utilizing scientifically engineered industrial nickel cobalt magnets, the Fuel Mule device aligns the electrons of the atom and the molecules, allowing the fuel to burn more efficiently, resulting in increased horsepower, cleaner emissions, and fuel savings. The Fuel Mule normally sells for $149.95, but we're offering a temporary promotional price of only $89.95, plus shipping and handling. Quick and easy to install, order your Fuel Mule today by calling 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. Do it now and start saving today.
The Republic Broadcasting Network is very proud to present a new educational tool that will inform and update our listeners to the most critically important topics and issues of the day. This new 50 CD collection contains invaluable information, carefully selected from the very best shows in the RBN archives. These standard format CDs have been painstakingly edited to remove all commercials and unrelated topic content. Each CD has been divided into multiple tracks for ease of use and review in any standard CD player. Each each CD targets a specific subject matter. For example, Agenda 21, vaccinations, 9/11, depleted uranium, the war in Iraq, fluoride, deception in the churches, genetically modified foods, animal RFID tags, and many more topics. We encourage you to make copies and get them out to as many people as you can. Call and order your library CDs for the price of $150, 800-724-2719, or go to the website rbnlive.com.
Today, now we are live with Jim Fetzer, your host, on Non-Random Thoughts. Sorry about that mix-up. I have moved to Madison, Wisconsin, and I think somebody didn't get the word, so I'm here on a delayed basis, but we're going to have a great show for you today. I want to begin by talking about a difference, a logical difference, between what's known in science as refutation versus explanation. Refuting a theory can be a relatively uncomplicated process. For example, take the hypothesis that all rabbits are white. That hypothesis can be refuted by discovering a single non-white rabbit. So if you find a single brown rabbit, you know the hypothesis all rabbits are white cannot be true. On the other hand, if you start looking at rabbits and find a whole bunch that are white, that can lend support to the hypothesis that all rabbits are white, but it can't be conclusive. It can't prove it unless you were to inspect every single rabbit, past, present, future, at every space-time point in the universe. Now, that, of course, is an impossibility, which means that an hypothesis like all rabbits are white is falsifiable, but it is not verifiable. Other hypotheses, such as that there is at least one brown rabbit, are verifiable, because if you can find a brown rabbit, you can establish that that is true on the basis of those observations. But to falsify the hypothesis that there isn't even one brown rabbit would require everywhere you look, past, present, future, and all space-time points, that there not be even one brown rabbit. So here we're talking about two very different kinds of claims. Universal hypotheses, falsifiable, not verifiable, existential, verifiable, not falsifiable. Now, when it comes to a theory about an event in a limited portion of space-time, such as the collapse of the Twin Towers on 9/11, it may be that we're in an evidential situation where we can both refute some theories and also potentially confirm or verify others. And indeed, if you look at the government's official account that the Twin Towers were brought down by the combined influence or effects of these jet planes impacting with the towers, which brought about these jet fuel-based fires, which led to a pancake collapse, research by many different students of the case who largely preceded the organization that Scholars for 9/11 Truth had discovered that the buildings were designed to withstand the impact of even the largest then commercial airliners, Boeing 707s, where the Boeing 767s that actually hit the building are very similar in their properties and their dimensions and their mass and their fuel capacity. That most of that fuel burned up in those gigantic fireballs that were so spectacular and made such a psychological impact, that the fuel that remained burned at a relatively low temperature, indicated by those billowing black clouds, where Underwriters Laboratory estimated that on the average those fires were only burning around 500 degrees Fahrenheit. Far too low to cause a steel to even weaken, and Underwriters Laboratory would know because they had certified the steel used in the building to up to 2,000 degrees. For up to 6 hours before it would even significantly weaken. So here you have much lower temperatures and for a much briefer duration because the South Tower, although hit second, fell first after only an hour. The North Tower hit first, fell second after only an hour and a half. So not only were the fires not sufficiently intense to cause the steel to even weaken, but it didn't endure for long enough to bring about that result, even if it had been a much more intense fire. Interestingly, on the 13th of February, 1975, the North Tower endured a fire that was quite a bit more extensive. On the 11th floor, it enveloped 65% of the floor, including the core, burned at 2,000 degrees for 3 hours, and yet none of the steel had to be replaced. So that's an indication of just how robust these buildings were. And, of course, the idea that the fuel then would have caused the steel to weaken and bring about a pancake collapse is contradicted on many accounts. As several students have pointed out, there wasn't enough kinetic energy, even if one floor had collapsed on another, to bring about the collapse of that floor in turn, nor was there enough kinetic energy to bring about the pulverization of the concrete flooring material, which means that the whole government account is basically a non-starter, as I'm inclined to put it. It's just fine if you're willing to believe impossible things, explaining that its truth would violate laws of nature, laws of physics and of engineering, which can't be violated and can't be changed. As a lot of students of this case are aware, but the American public generally perhaps doesn't yet fully appreciate, no steel structure high-rise has ever been brought down as a result of fire, neither before 9/11, nor after 9/11, nor, if our research is correct, on 9/11. In fact, the actual causes appear to have been very different. Almost coincidental with the planes impacting at the 80th and the 96th floor, there were massive explosions at the sub-basement level, the effects of which were witnessed by William Rodriguez, among others, who had a friend there, a co-worker, who had virtually the skin ripped off of his body. Tremendous explosions that even were recorded on seismographs maintained by Columbia University at 0.7 and 0.9 on the Richter scale, that appear to have dislodged the 47 core columns that extended all the way up these 110-story structures from the bedrock. So this was very significant because it substantially diminished then the carrying capacity of the 47 core columns that were the structure, the heart of the building from an engineering point of view. These buildings were very interesting in their design and were quite innovative at the time. The construction began in 1966 and occupancy began in 1970. Because by having these 47 core columns as a principal support structure, it created the opportunity for lots of open office space surrounding all around. And, of course, they were square buildings, and there were 240 additional support columns external to the building, which was another ingenious feature of the design. And, of course, the buildings were actually blowing up from the top down, blowing up from the top down. The government's account could not be further from the facts of the case. The blowing up from the top down, Judy Wood, mechanical engineer, has suggested is analogous to two gigantic trees that are actually turning to sawdust from the top down. And, of course, they're being enveloped by these massive clouds of fine particles that include the pulverization, the pulverized concrete, the office furniture being, annihilated, as well as any living thing. But that would include, of course, the heavy metals in the computers and so forth. The asbestos with which the building was laid, and plus, of course, whatever kind of explosive was involved here. So we know just by looking at the properties, the physical properties of the collapse of the Twin Towers, which is really better described as a destruction. It's not actually a collapse. Just to offer a contrast case so you can understand the nature of a collapse versus a demolition that doesn't involve a collapse. World Trade Center 7, this 47-story building that was about 300 yards away from the Twin Towers, was brought down in a classic controlled demolition. You see all the floors falling at the same time, near free fall speed, about 6.6, or as Steve would say, 6.5 plus or minus 0.2 seconds, to the ground, into its own footprint, exactly the way you see those resorts and casinos in Las Vegas being brought down. Absolutely classic vintage controlled demolition. Contrast that with the World Trade Center. None of the floors are moving. The building isn't all falling at once. Instead, it's blowing up from the top down. So, what we have here is massive, overwhelming evidence that refutes the government's official story. The government's account can't possibly be true. It's not only inconsistent with the facts, but it is its truth would violate laws of nature and of physics and of engineering. On the other hand, to try to explain exactly how it would be done is a difficult and challenging task. And today I'm very pleased to have as my special guest Stephen Jones, a professor of physics from Brigham Young University, who has spent more time studying the destruction of the World Trade Centers, I dare say, than has any other person. Just to give you a little background about Professor Jones, He earned his bachelor's degree in physics, magna cum laude, from Brigham Young. He has a Ph.D. in physics from Vanderbilt in 78. He conducted Ph.D. research at the Stanford Linear Accelerator from 74 to 77. Did postdoctoral research at Cornell University in Los Alamos Mason Physics Facility. When I founded Scholars for 9/11 Truth in mid-December, I turned to Steve and invited him to join me as co-chair because of his background in physics and because of the extent of his work on the demolition of the towers. I'm very glad to welcome him today as my guest. Steve, welcome to Non-Random Thoughts. Well, Steve's not here yet. When we're today, we have a couple of technical glitches. Let me go forward and just tell you a little more about Steve's work, or in particular, you know, some those of us who have become members of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, and there are now over 300 members divided into four different categories, including 200, more than 200, who have research abilities in relation to different aspects of these issues, and over 85 who have academic affiliations or the equivalent. They include physicists, mechanical engineers, civil engineers, aeronautical engineers, pilots. They include a very distinguished group of prominent figures such as Bob Bauman, who directed the Star Wars program research in both Democratic and Republican administrations, who has a Ph.D. in nuclear engineering from Caltech. Morgan Reynolds, a distinguished economist and former professor from A&M, Texas A&M University, who was a chief economist in the George W. Bush administration. They include Andreas von Bülow, who is the German assistant minister for defense and in charge of the science and technology program for Germany, 35 years member of the German parliament. David Ray Griffin, distinguished theologian from the Claremont Graduate Schools, now retired, who has published over 30 books, including three or four. We're talking about a distinguished group who are dedicating themselves to exposing the truth and revealing falsehoods about 9/11. Stay tuned when I hope to have my special guest, Steve Jones, with us today.
Headline news: activation of our most decorated military divisions for confrontation with Russia and China through their ally, Iran. Military action when food shortages occur will divert food supplies to the military. The administration tells us to get non-perishable food. The government is right in telling us to have food stored, but when they say get some, you know we'll need a lot. The counsel to get some food gives the system deniability when food shortages are the reason for wiping out freedoms. Decide how many years of food will get your family through the coming times and store it before it's gone or can't be transported. Remember, folks, dishonest retailers know you don't know what or how much to store. Bad food plans are life-threatening. Call 800-409-5633 for warnings and guidelines. That's the J. Michael Stevens Group, 800-409-5633, or on the web, efoodsdirect.com. That's efoodsdirect.com.
Axiom, The Second American Civil War, a new novel by T. Edward Allen. Through corruption, greed, and incompetence, the neocons have brought the world to the brink of World War III. John Carter and his family are caught in the middle of a terrifying plunge into chaos. When the world economy collapses, America is brought down with it. The focal point is the ideological conflict between progressives and conservatives. And when civil war breaks out, Americans find that every axiom they took for granted has been overturned. Dangerously political and thought-provoking, T. Edward Allen takes readers on a wild ride and a glimpse into America's future with madmen at the helm.
Buy Axiom at www.axiom-thenovel.com. That's axiom-thenovel.com, or find it at amazon.com. Get in on the buzz. Purchase your copy. Axiom, The Second American Civil War by T. Edward Allen.
Are you experiencing memory loss, mood swings, slowed reflexes? Well, North American Herb and Spices NeuroLoft helps make your mind and nerves work better. The powerful herbs and spices in NeuroLoft naturally support the function of the brain and nervous system. To maximize your mental clarity and productivity, call 800-243-5242 and try NeuroLoft today.
Introducing the world's best air purifier, the Aeronizer. The Aeronizer produces high levels of activated oxygen right from the air you're breathing. It works the way nature does. It's so powerful it kills molds and mildews, as well as bacteria and viruses in the air and on the surfaces in your home. Made in the USA of the finest materials with an unconditional 2-year warranty. Call 877-605-9200 or visit the website at www.aeronair.us.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on Non-Random Thoughts, and I'm very pleased to welcome my special guest today, Steve Jones. Steve, are you there?
I'm here, Jim. Hi.
I'm just delighted. I don't know if you heard the first part, Steve, actually.
I did, I was listening.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Well, I'll get your, you know, any comments you wish to make in momentarily, but we have had a change in technical assistance there at the station, and as a consequence, there was a glitch there in reaching either of us. Actually, I had to call in myself because they didn't even seem to have my number. So please,
no problem. We're here, and
yeah, please don't feel neglected. Now, I was explaining about the difference from a logical point of view between refutation and explanation, or in this case, you know, roughly falsifying the government's account versus verifying or better confirming an alternative, and how we have a massive amount of evidence that show the government's account is false, and I was inventorying some of that, as you heard. But where coming up with an alternative explanation is a very difficult and challenging matter, and where that is where you have been spending most of your time. And before we turn to that, Steve, I'd just like to say, did you hear me give your background sketch, too, in terms of...
Yeah, that was accurate.
That was accurate. Okay, great. Because I actually had punched out the Wikipedia piece, and I have found that sometimes Wikipedia is accurate and sometimes it is not. It's a very odd kind of publication because, of course, it's supposed to be the case that anyone can edit it. That turns out not to be true when even I... thought to edit Scholars for 9/11 Truth, for example, to make their entry more timely and accurate. I was rebuffed repeatedly, which led me to eventually, you know, publish a piece of what I was trying to say about our society.
Yeah.
But in any case, Steve, did you have any or in general agreement with what I've been sketching about the difference between, you know, falsifying the government's account and establishing an alternative?
Sure. Let me add one thought, Jim, and that is, as I talk to some people about the government's account, about the demolition of the buildings in general, I find that for a number of people, even though they're scientists, the hypothesis, or the official story hypothesis, fires and damage, to them is not falsifiable. In other words, as you point out correctly, an hypothesis in science, in order to be scientific, has to be testable. It has to be possible through some experiment to falsify it. Now, that sounds kind of funny to the layman, I suppose, but but if we think about it, we can all understand this scientific principle and the importance of falsifiability, and I was glad you brought it up. So, like I said, about the rabbits, you know, all rabbits are white. Wait, I found one brown rabbit. Well, then that hypothesis is out the window. Well, when I talk to some people who should know better, about the official story, they don't want to hear any evidence that doesn't fit. And I find that, you know, discussion about the molten metal, for instance, or the speed of the collapse of Building 7, the symmetry, and so on, these points that we've hammered out and researched now thoroughly, gosh, they just don't want to deal with it. They don't want to confront the evidence to them, the official story is not falsifiable. And I point out to them, then, that this is to you not science. It's some sort of myth or metaphysics is what we call it. I mean,
yeah.
You know, ever since Newton, we've hammered out we have to be able to do experiments to test our hypotheses.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, just to add on to what you're saying, Steve, I think there are two dimensions. One psychological, Mohs, right. Have a psychological dimension, but Kuhn, of course, in his work on the structure of scientific revolutions, explained how even scientists may hang on to a tattered and torn theory until they have a preferable alternative. So even if
they
know that it's actually been refuted, they treat the falsifiers as what they call anomalies, meaning puzzles that need to be reconciled to preserve the old account. And
that's
only,
right.
You know, will actually abandon the old theory when they're confronted with a more adequate alternative that can account
that's
for everything
correct.
The old theory plus some of the anomalies that the old one couldn't.
Exactly.
But I think at a deeper level, what you're talking about, Steve, is really this cognitive dissonance phenomenon where persons who are confronted with information that threatens their most core beliefs may find it impossible to accept and integrate that information. I liken it. I mean, the idea that your own government could, for example, be responsible for the mass murder of 3,000 innocent Americans, that's a staggering belief.
Right, it is.
I liken it to, you know, the case of a wife who discovers evidence that her husband has been molesting their daughter. It's that kind of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, social workers report many cases where that sort of thing happens, and the wife just can't bring herself to reconcile herself to the truth.
Yeah, but look at, and again, following up on your example there, if the mother does not confront this evidence and bring out the truth, then what happens? Well,
yeah.
the pattern continues, and that's what we're concerned about here with 9/11, this evidence now is just becoming overwhelming for an inside job.
That's right.
If we can't confront it, then what will stop this pattern from continuing? We must face up to it.
Absolutely right. My special guest, Steve Jones, will be right back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth. Gasoline prices have reached record highs, and with no relief in sight, what can you as an individual do to lessen the impact on your wallet? With a guaranteed minimum of 10% and up to 30% increase in your fuel mileage, you can deny the fat cat oil executives at least some of your hard-earned money. Introducing the Fuel Mule, a very simple but revolutionary product that fits around the fuel line in your car, truck, or furnace. Utilizing scientifically engineered industrial nickel-cobalt magnets, the Fuel Mule device aligns the electrons of the atom and the molecules, allowing the fuel to burn more efficiently, resulting in increased horsepower, cleaner emissions, and fuel savings. The Fuel Mule normally sells for $149.95, but we're offering a temporary promotional price of only $89.95, plus shipping and handling. Quick and easy to install, order your Fuel Mule today by calling 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719. Do it now and start saving today.
KU Band Satellite is here. RBN is now offering a brand new way to hear your favorite programs. Listening to RBN via satellite is easy on the ears. Clean digital audio combined with consistently reliable reception anywhere in North America. KU utilizes a 30-inch dish and receiver similar to the equipment the subscription satellite TV services use. In fact, this satellite receiver also picks up a lot of television and music channel programming, even other talk radio networks. All of this with absolutely no monthly subscription fees, ever. Take advantage of our introductory offer and order your KU Dish receiver today for only $149 plus shipping and handling, and begin enjoying our highest quality audio available 365 days a year. Visit our website, www.rbnlive.com, for more information, or call 1-800-724-2719. That's 1-800-724-2719.
clean, consistent, and affordable.
The Bill of Rights protects every American's God-given right to keep and bear arms. Now that right is being seriously undermined as legally registered rifles are being confiscated in some parts of our country. If we're not careful, we may find ourselves with no right to own guns. And that's where Gun Owners of America comes in. Gun Owners of America is in Washington every day fighting for you to keep that right. Congressman Ron Paul has called GOA the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. You need to be part of this great grassroots group of activists who are keeping the heat on their members of Congress. Find out right now how you can join. Call 888-886-GUNS and get started receiving their fact-filled newsletters and action alerts. Call 888-886-GUNS or go to their webpage at gunowners.org and help make your voice heard in Washington. Make that call right now and call Gun Owners of America at 888-886-GUNS. Remember, it's not just about gun control, it's about control.
Happiness is a warm gun. Happiness is a warm gun, mama. When I hold you in my arms and I feel my finger on your trigger, nobody can do me no harm. Because it's a warm gun, mama.
Happiness. This is your host, Jim Fletcher, on Non-Random Thoughts. Back with my special guest, Steve Jones, who is the co-chair of Dollars for 9/11 Truth, which we founded in mid-December and which has been, I think, successful beyond our wildest expectations. Would that be fair to say, Steve?
Boy, I'd say so, Jim. Yeah, the recent coverage we've had in CNN and other publications, Washington Post, I think, even mentioned us, and certainly New York Times article a while back. So, yeah, I'm very pleased at how we've been able to bring attention. It's just amazing to me how so many people are interested in this. As I talk to them, not all are signing up with the scholars for one reason or another, you understand. Mm-hmm. Very well, but there are just increasing numbers. I get people stopping me and saying, well, I've been following what you say, and you know, some will say, I think there's something to it, or some will say, I'm convinced, you know, I've looked at your website and your paper and I'm really becoming convinced. So there does seem to be indeed a groundswell. And,
yes. And I, of course, we all owe an enormous debt of thanks to C-SPAN for broadcasting
right,
not just once or even twice, but four times the panel discussion from the American right, Scholars Conference in L.A.
Right. Absolutely. See, on that, Jim, I wanted to bring together two things here. You mentioned on the C-SPAN broadcast panel about the toxicity of the dust.
Yes.
And I found this a very important point, too. And then just a moment ago, you mentioned that people have this cognitive dissonance as they say, wow, how could our government hurt us intentionally? But you see, here's an example. This dust was known to be toxic within days after 9/11 as the scientists rushed in to analyze the dust and found out it was very alkaline, which, to put it in other terms, it was like liquid Drano, they said, in its toxicity. Now, no one's going to breathe in or swallow Drano, but that's what this dust was equivalent to as they studied it in many areas there of New York City and, of course, as it swept across into New Jersey as well. But the report of that then went to the Environmental Protection Agency, and you know the story. You told it on C-SPAN, but I just want to mention it here. I've brought this up to a number of firm Republicans who say our government would never, Republicans would never lie to us. And I say, well, hold on, let's talk about the dust. So to continue the story, EPA now has these reports from scientists that say the dust is highly toxic, and special equipment and gear needs to be worn as this is cleaned up. Now, what happened, we learned the sequence later, but the EPA report with these warnings goes to the White House, the National Security Council, and they actually deleted the cautionary statements and the warnings and replaced them with false reassurances. And you know the story. That was worked out by EPA Inspector Nikki Tinsley. And 2 years after 9/11, then the facts came out of what had happened. So then the EPA issues public press releases saying, well, it's safe. Go back to work. Don't worry about the dust. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. And now there's thousands, estimated over 12,000 workers who went back to work and breathed in the dust, being assured by our own EPA, our own government, that this was safe, and in fact it was highly toxic, and people have died from this. I had an email just the other day, Jim, from a woman who said she's one of these victims. She's having enormous respiratory problems because of the dust, and she's very angry that the government said it's safe. Don't worry about it. You know, go back to work. And she said it wasn't safe, and now I'm suffering. And in fact, she said she's dying.
And potentially we're talking about multiplying the number of deaths by like a factor of five.
Yes.
I mean, it's just absolutely stunning. So you got
isn't
the original 3,000 and you're adding 12 more, so potentially you have 15,000 deaths related
that's
to that.
That's right. Yeah, and why isn't this in the press? I mean, why don't we say, look, the government has no right to overturn results of science. And here is a precise example.
It is.
Incontrovertible of what they had tried to do.
Is it the case, Steve, as many of us hope, that the analysis of the dust may reveal not only, of course, those concrete particles, which we all know are there, and the residue from the destruction of the office furniture and so forth, which we all know is going to be there, and the asbestos, but also some telltale signs of the type of explosives that were used to bring the buildings down?
Well, that's a good question, Jim, and I'm going to, since you brought it up, I'm going to answer yes. And we have looked at the dust just recently. This is nowhere on the web yet, so this is fresh data. What we have found, and I've got the data sheets right in front of me. I've been working on these and analyzing. So we took the dust. Let me tell you what I did when I had this sample of dust. Then I took a magnet. I was using a magnet for other things, and it was sitting there. I thought, well, let's see if there's any magnetic component to this World Trade Center dust. Now, let me back up a minute. The dust was obtained in a woman's apartment. You know, it had just come through, and this happened throughout New York. She was close enough to the World Trade Center demolitions that she had this dust in her apartment, so she gathered it up and just saved it. I assume that's legal. It was in her own apartment, you know.
I think it became her possession when it came through the window.
Right. It's in her apartment. And she saved it. And good thing she did. So as, you know, my paper came out and I said, we're interested in this dust, she sent me a sample. And not all of it. And again, I'm glad people do that when they send samples. So here's what I did. Then I took a magnet. And I wish I'd thought of that months ago, but there when I got it anyway, months ago. So I took a magnet, and it was in a plastic bag. So you can imagine this dust. Now, I'm just simply pulling the magnet along the bottom of the dust to see if there's any magnetic component. And lo and behold, there was a substantial amount of magnetic particulate in this dust. And it's black in color. So I took it to our XRF, our X-ray fluorescence machine, and analyzed it, and it has, and I also looked at the non-magnetic component as well, you see. So, guess what? No surprise here, a lot of aluminum. Now, aluminum is not magnetic, but aluminum is one of the end products of the thermite reaction. Unfortunately, it's not. For the dust, anyway, it's not going to be cut and dried because there are other sources of aluminum. In particular, cement has aluminum hydroxide in it. So aluminum's interesting but not telling. And then I looked at iron. Now, there's a lot of iron. This would be why it's so magnetic. and iron, elemental iron, that is not iron oxide, but these particles of iron are the end product of the thermite reaction. You start with iron oxide and aluminum powder, you end up with iron, metal, molten, and some of that spits out as little sparks, little particles that come off, and then, of course, aluminum oxide. So we do see the aluminum oxide in the dust, but we also see this iron. And I'm trying to pin it down as to whether it's elemental or not. I mean, like I say, these are fresh, hot off the press, as it were.
Well, that's quite fascinating.
I know I'm getting into some detail here, but probably more than you wanted. But,
No. I think this is extremely important, and I'm very glad to hear this. Are independent tests being run on other samples by any other labs or individuals? Or
Let me tell you, we are working on that. Unfortunately, well, independent labs. I mean,
solitary scholars.
Yeah, I have three independent labs here at the university working on it, and those are giving completely consistent results on our samples, dust and solidified metal. Now, outside labs, so far, I haven't had, let me just say, we're still working on that, Jim.
Yeah.
We're still working. It's a little hard to get cooperation.
Yeah. No, that's excellent, Steve. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, when we start talking about the science, of course, we are committed to a certain method of approach, which in my reconstruction includes puzzlement. We have a puzzling phenomenon,
right,
like in this case, these towers, as it were, disappearing before our very eyes, and therefore we speculate about the alternative possible explanations. And
right,
it's essential at that stage, I'm sure you would agree, that we include the full range of possible alternatives, because otherwise, if we proceed by a process of elimination, what we're left with may not be the true hypothesis if we've excluded any in the beginning.
Yeah, and even worse in this case, we were told within, I think, hours, you know, we know this is Al-Qaeda, we blame it all, no one else is involved, just Al-Qaeda, you know, closure, it's like blinders after that point for many people, scientists included, unfortunately.
Yes.
Any explanation that would go outside of that official story.
Yeah, it was actually very like in Dallas in 63 when they were pushing three shots from a lone shooter, you know, already that day. In fact, within minutes of the assassination, those kinds of reports were coming out and going over the wire, and it was really astonishing. And, of course, it was nonsense, just as what the government was telling us in this case was nonsense. But let me see if I have a full range here, Steve. I mean, obviously, one alternative is the official account, you know, the planes, the fires, the pancake collapse, none of which is sustainable. Then we have the alternatives involving thermite, thermate, and possibly additional explosives like RDX.
Yes,
and then there would be a more exotic or technically class of possible causes like fission, fusion, scalar energy, right up to then a category of unknown, you know, unknown source, new kinds of mechanisms. But actually, I can't discount that because I discovered in my own research on the death of Senator Paul Wellstone in Minnesota just before the election in 2002 that his plane appeared to have been taken out by the use of a directed energy weapon that overwhelmed the electrical system and switched some solenoids and put the props on idle so that the plane had no forward thrust. I mean, this is a very clever plan. And because most people don't even know of the existence of these weapons, of course, you know, they would never normally think about it. And if I didn't have a PhD in electromagnetism and other experts working with me on this, I probably wouldn't have figured it out myself. But all I'm saying there is you got to keep this category of unknown, you know, that there's some alternative we haven't considered yet. Would that be something like the full range of alternatives here?
Well, sure. And, I mean, as scientists, we need to look at these hypotheses and bring to bear empirical evidence and experiments and sort things out.
So we look at
exactly
what you have been doing, it appears to me, is looking at the thermite-thermate category, and we know thermite and combined sulfur with thermate, combined sulfur with thermite, and of course NIST reported sulfur residue on the steel, and I take it you have discovered indications of thermite residue on the steel. And now this further evidence you're deriving from the dust would seem to lend additional support to that hypothesis.
It certainly is consistent with it, and there's some mysteries here that we're puzzling over, like the high zinc content in the dust, which was noted in the studies, but they didn't draw any conclusions. I mean, where is this all this zinc coming from? Where, I don't know, but I'm finding it here. Now let me come back to two points, Jim. First of all, the sulfidation in the steel, that was noted by FEMA and ignored in the NIST report, interestingly, because the FEMA report was first. You would think that the NIST report would clarify this. The FEMA report basically said, this is a mystery. Here's sulfur and sulfidation in the steel, high temperature corrosion with sulfur involved. Well, we don't know what's going on. And that is fair for scientists to put. That was in Appendix C. And there was some scientists out of Massachusetts who brought forth those data. So you'd think that NIST would deal with that, but they did not, to their discredit, I must say, to not even mention then the sulfidation that I could find in the report. I'm quite sure that.
That's
one issue I wanted to clarify. The second one on the mini nukes, again, it's a hypothesis, and fair enough, we should look at then the empirical data. As scientists, as you mentioned, we then, you know, it's not just a matter of debate or opinion. It's a matter of actually using the scientific method to bring experiments to bear. And so I've looked at the mini nukes. I actually have some expertise in fusion, having worked with it for the entirety of my career.
Yes.
So there's a fellow, I think, out in Finland who suggests that a mini fusion bomb, a thermonuclear bomb, was used. This is his hypothesis, the mini nuke hypothesis, used in both towers. I don't know what he says about Building 7, presumably in the basement of the towers. So what evidence can we bring to bear? And this is an example of using the scientific method. I actually analyzed then dust. I've taken the dust and tested it with a radioactivity monitor counter, as well as some of the previously molten metal, solidified metal, and I find no radioactivity in these samples. Now, you'd say, well, fusion doesn't produce, I've heard this argument, doesn't produce much radioactivity. That argument is incorrect. We have done a number of experiments, unfortunately, with hydrogen bombs, and what happens is that not only do they release tritium, which is one of the fuels used in the hydrogen bomb, which is radioactive, but in addition, they release enormous amounts of neutrons, 14.1 million electron neutrons. These neutrons are highly penetrating, and they will make radioactive materials that they encounter, including steel, glass, concrete, and so on. They make things radioactive, and a lot of that radioactivity lasts for thousands of years. So when you look for radioactivity, you say, well, this, we find it, we have evidence for a fusion weapon. Fission also produces copious neutrons, the same argument, they're just not quite as energetic as the fusion neutrons. So we don't find those neutrons. This then becomes evidence against the use of mini nukes. In fact, very strong evidence against mini nukes.
Hold that thought, Steve. We'll be right back with my special guest, Steve Jones. Stand by.
Get a pen and paper ready for emergency storable food information. The attention of the nation is focusing on families storing emergency food in their homes. FEMA has recently proven that their fears of being unable to care for large numbers of people are justified. Hurricane relief in the South was a disaster. The system for tracking all food is now in place. There are numbered stickers on produce, grocery store ID cards track purchases, and now veterinarians will police the permitting and tagging of all livestock food production. The need to prepare has gone from a walk to a full-blown race. Major churches are telling their members, get food now. You'll never have to stand in a bread line if you have your own bread. For help with food supplies, call the J. Michael Stevens Group at 800-409-5633. That's 800-409-5633. on the web, efoodsdirect.com. That's efoodsdirect.com.
Axiom, The Second American Civil War, a new novel by T. Edward Allen. Through corruption, greed, and incompetence, the neocons have brought the world to the brink of World War III. John Carter and his family are caught in the middle of a terrifying plunge into chaos. When the world economy collapses, America is brought down with it. The focal point is the ideological conflict between progressives and conservatives. And when civil war breaks out, Americans find that every axiom they took for granted has been overturned. Dangerously political and thought-provoking, T. Edward Allen takes readers on a wild ride and a glimpse into America's future with madmen at the helm.
Buy Axiom at www.axiom-thenovel.com. That's axiom-thenovel.com or find it at amazon.com. Get in on the buzz. Purchase your copy. Axiom, The Second American Civil War by T. Edward Allen.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN Network.
With my special guest, Stephen Jones, and we're trying to find out what happened in New York City on 9/11. And we're in the third stage of scientific inquiries, as I would unpack them, in terms of puzzlement. You have a puzzling phenomenon, speculation concerning the full range of alternative possible explanations, government's account, planes, fires, pancake, demonstrably, provably false, even violates laws of nature, laws of physics, engineering. Then we have a couple of alternative possible accounts, including thermite-thermate-RDX combination, and then some more exotic weapons, fission, fusion, scalar, whatever, and then there's a possibility some unknown weapon. And in the third stage, we're talking about adaptation or adapting the hypotheses to the evidence. In other words, deriving consequences that must be true if the hypothesis is true and testing it against the observable evidence. And finally, if when we have sufficient evidence, when technically speaking, the likelihoods of hypotheses have been established given the evidence, and there's sufficient evidence, then we're entitled to accept the hypothesis with the highest likelihood, albeit in the tentative, infallible fashion characteristic of science that would yield an explanation. Now, Steve, what you're giving here is some explanation of why some additional evidence you have discovered, in particular in relation to the dust samples, tends to substantiate the thermite-thermate RDX explanation and undermine fission-fusion scalar alternative.
Okay, that's fair. Let's see. Let me back up just a little. Most of the evidence for the thermite comes from the solidified metal samples. I mean, the dust, we're still in the puzzlement stage. As I mentioned, there's a lot of zinc, and frankly, there's a great deal of zinc also in the solidified metal, which I hadn't noticed before because I hadn't looked. I mean, I was not expecting it, but as we... I worked with a good scientist here, you know, a third lab now here at BYU, looking at these, and I decided, I tell you the truth, I had the machine to myself after he got it set up, and I worked well into the evening. And so I'm trying, you have to tell it, okay, look for zinc, look for calcium, look for chlorine, and so on. So I look for zinc, and lo and behold, this huge signal shows up both in the molten metal and the dust. And I'm still in the puzzlement stage over the zinc. But the molten metal now shows the sulfur and, of course, iron, small amounts of aluminum, and fluorine, interestingly enough, because fluorine is very difficult to explain in terms of building materials.
And, of course, the pools of molten metal that you have frequently emphasized,
right,
which endured for 3, 4, or 5 weeks after the destruction of the towers, could not have been a product of any source of energy attributed by the government to the phenomena.
Right. That's a very important point. Yeah.
Steve, we'll be right back. Please stand by with my special guest, Steve Jones.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.